14 minutes after 11, Abongile Kanzelenzele standing in for Clarence Ford and looking forward to having a conversation with you. We now kick into second gear in this last hour of the show. Now, a groundbreaking constitutional challenge has been launched out of the Pretoria High Court by the Embrace Project against the problematic definitions of consent and rape in sexual offence or in the Sexual Offences Act as recently amended. The Minister of Justice and Correctional Services, the President and Minister of Women, Youths and Persons with Disabilities are cited here as respondents. Leanne Gamonas from the Embrace Project joins you now to tell you a bit more about the details of the project. Leanne, good morning to you. Thank you so very much for joining us on the show.
Hi, good morning, and good morning to all the listeners as well. Thank you for having me.
Leanne, perhaps for the purposes of our listeners right now, maybe you can summarize, if it's possible, and what the project is about and what are you hoping to get?
When you say the project, do you mean the Embrace Project or the constitutional challenge? So just to explain
maybe start with you guys, who you guys are and what you're all about. Then we'll get to the nitty gritty. Yeah.
Okay, great. So the Embrace Project is an advocacy organization, a gender-based violence and femicide advocacy organization that uniquely marries art and advocacy to combat gender-based violence and femicide in South Africa. So we make a point of making the causes and also the prevalence of gender-based violence and femicide in South Africa quite well known. We have social media platforms for that. And of course, we bring strategic litigation like the one I'm just about to talk to you about.
And in talking about the challenge, maybe you can also go into detail for that. What is the challenge? What is the court challenge all about?
So the constitutional challenge that we've now raised, is based on basically the problematic definition of rape, like you summarized, which the issue around the definition of rape as it currently stands really lies in one of the four elements that are required to prove rape, which is the element of intent. And that element, intent, is actually a problem throughout the Sexual Offences Act. So any and every sexual offence that is covered by the Act requires this element of intent to be proven. Now, the issue that we raise is not that, proving the element of intent is an issue, but rather the test that is currently being applied by the court is extremely problematic. And that is what we are challenging at the moment. So maybe just to make it a bit easier for everybody to understand and to cut away from the legalese. If we take the definition of rape, in order to prove rape and get a successful conviction of rape, the state, so the prosecution, has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that there was unlawfulness, that there was an act of sexual penetration committed without the complainant's consent, and that the accused person or the perpetrator intended to sexually penetrate the complainant without their consent. Now, generally speaking, proving that there was an act of sexual penetration is not really an issue. It's usually common cause, whether or not there was an act of sexual penetration. Then, determining whether or not there was consent, that might be a little bit more contentious. Mm. And then proving the element of unlawfulness, that's not too hard. The big issue lies with intent. And the reason I say this is because the reason we brought this constitutional challenge is because we had a rape survivor approach us to say to us, hey guys, I had a rape case. I went through the motions and the trauma, the secondary trauma, sitting through a court explaining what I went through, only to have the magistrate say to me that objectively speaking, there was sexual penetration. I, as the rape survivor, did not consent to it, and it was unlawful, but the state couldn't prove that the accused person, the perpetrator, had subjectively intended to rape me. And it's that subjective intent that has actually proven to be one of the most insurmountable barriers to rape convictions. I mean, we're talking about a rape conviction of below double digits, about 8% or so, which is shocking. And so what we're asking for is that instead of having this subjective test for the element of intent, that we use an objective test. So in other words, instead of asking the accused, hey, what did you think subjectively in your mind, was happening here? Did you subjectively, think that because she didn't kick and scream that she was consenting? Moving away from that line of questioning to the following line of questioning, would, given all of the evidence, all of the circumstances put before the court, would a reasonable person have ever thought that consent was given here? And that is what we're asking for in terms of this legal challenge, for that shift.
Leanne, I'm going to ask you to explain that again, because I hear you and I'm listening and I'm thinking maybe we just need to hear it one more time. So the conversation is around subjective intent and objective intent. And maybe just explain that to us once again.
Sure. So the big difference, the crux of this challenge that we're bringing, is that we're asking not for a change in the elements that are required to prove rape or other sexual offenses, but rather for the test applied when trying to figure out whether or not an accused person had the intention of committing a sexual offense. We're asking for that test to be changed from a subjective test, which requires the court to look into the subjective state of mind of an accused person. So basically what that means is the more perverse an accused person's understanding of consent is, the higher the chances of them getting off, because in their subjective state of mind, unless you were scratching their eyes out, they would never have understood that, you weren't consenting. And that's hugely problematic. So what we're moving or wanting to do is to move from that line of questioning to an objective test, which actually just asks, would a reasonable person, given everything that's happened, I mean, you can see that, for example, the complainant is uncomfortable, saying to you, please stop, like, I'm not comfortable with this, but didn't outright say, like, I don't want to have sex. To have those sets of circumstances looked at by the court and say, a reasonable person in that circumstance would have understood that there was no consent, or would have at least understood that it was questionable whether or not they were consenting, and so would take a step further and actually clarify that, which in this case didn't happen. And that is what we're asking for, just this change in the test.
I want to bring the listeners into the conversation, Leanne. Thank you so very much for that explanation. 22 minutes after 11, Abongile Kanzelenzele standing in for Clarence Ford. I want to, if you've just joined the conversation, you're listening to the voice of Leanne. Leanne is joining us to talk to us about a groundbreaking constitutional challenge that has been launched out of the Pretoria High Court. This is by the Embrace Project against the problematic definitions of consent and rape in Sexual Offences Act, or in the Sexual Offences Act as recently amended. The Minister of Justice and Correctional Services, the President and the Minister of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities have been cited as respondents. And Leanne, talking to you and the conversation, saying, they talk to subjective, or the laws now talk to subjective intent, and they say, no, it should be an objective intent. Leanne, you can correct me at any given time, please. I don't want to mess around with this conversation. If you have any thoughts on this, would love to hear from you also at home. Leanne, bring it back to you. I understand that in his affidavit, the chief director of the legislative development, that's Leonard Tsietsi Sebelmecha, on behalf of the minister, argues that, your project's application in the relief sought, if the relief is granted, it would result in, one, a revocation of the accused person's presumption of innocence. And I'm going to read all of them, then you can just maybe share your views on that. Secondly, the burden of proof unjustly falling on the accused instead of the state. Thirdly, a lowering of the standard of proof from beyond a reasonable doubt to negligence, and a conviction of rape when the accused was merely negligent, being too harsh a punishment. Your thoughts and views on that?
So, honestly, I was actually we were all quite shocked when we received this answering affidavit. The concerns listed by the Minister of Justice's representative in his answering affidavit, the ones that you just read out, are really like an overreach. As I had explained earlier, there are four elements that must be proven in order for a successful rape conviction. To say that by adjusting the test for one of those elements, that that would result in the presumption of innocence being taken away, that it would result in the accused person having to prove that they were innocent as opposed to the state having to prove that they were guilty. I can't even begin to connect the dots, because the state, even with our application as it currently stands, would still have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. There is no drop in the standard that, you know, there was unlawfulness, there was intent, there was an act of sexual penetration, there was no consent. That still has to all be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. The only difference is that the test used to determine whether or not intent existed beyond a reasonable doubt has now changed. So these concerns that the minister raises in his representative's affidavit don't make sense at all. It doesn't even, yeah, the dots don't even connect up. And the last thing that he also raised was that, you know, it would result in somebody who, yeah, committed an act of negligence being punished with too harsh a punishment. And actually what the affidavit went into in terms of detail is they tried to compare murder, the crime of murder, for example, where you have to have intent to be convicted for the crime of murder. But if you were negligent and you ended up killing someone, you're actually charged with a lesser crime called culpable homicide. So I don't quite understand that analogy, because rape doesn't actually have a lesser, there is no equivalent for a lesser offense of rape.
Leon, this is a difficult one. And so for you guys then, where to from here? What's the next course? There's been a response in the form of an affidavit. Are you going back to it? Are you objecting to any of these points? What happens now?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So the process now would be for us to file or deliver a replying affidavit to the minister's answering affidavit, which is what we're currently working on with our legal representatives. We are going to fight this tooth and nail. And, you know, we will have our day in court where a court will decide on whose argument is more correct and more plausible, and believable. So that is what we're working on currently. But I think maybe for me to conclude, I would also just like to point out to you and to your audience that the nature and tone of the answering affidavit that we received. So the minister's representative was actually trying to convince us that the laws that we currently have in South Africa are not misogynistic, that and also simultaneously tried to blame us for saying that our high rates of gender-based violence and femicide, that we're saying that that is now to be put on legislation, that that is the cause of the violence, which is not what we're saying at all. But the minister then, his representative in the answering affidavit, concluded by saying the following. This is after he's trying to convince us that our laws are not misogynistic. He says, "The act does not perpetuate rape culture as suggested, but protects the victim of crime as well. The victim must comply with the provisions of the act if she wants the act to come to her aid, because no one is above the law. Furthermore, the court is requested not to suspend anything, as the act does not have any irregularities and it must be left as is. The applicants are only driven by their ego towards men, and they are using their emotions to persuade the court to declare unconstitutional an act which is in line with the Constitution." That is our Chief Director of Legislative Development.
So, Leon, I mean, we know in our country how the legal process can be a long and tedious one. How long perhaps can we expect this to be drawn out in the law courts before we can have a judgment on this? Do you know any ideas?
So, I mean, for us to be heard in the High Court, which is obviously where we first, the court that we first approached, court to first instance, we're hoping for a hearing date by hopefully no later than the end of this year. But because that's not the end of the road, any judgment that would then follow from the High Court, and I mean, that can be delivered months after our hearing, there's still a number of appeals processes. And so that could take us years to get to a point where we finally have the Constitutional Court, which is where this has to land up eventually, before they declare a change in the legislation, or that legislature has to change this legislation. So in the meantime, victims will continue to suffer this injustice, which is why we were really hoping that the state wouldn't oppose this application so that we could speed up the process. But yeah, I mean, after what I just read to you, it's quite clear that that's not the state's intention.
Leah, and I have unfortunately run out of time, but before I let you go, your parting words maybe to the listeners?
My parting words are, well, we hope that everybody actually gets behind this application. I know that it is for the courts to determine in the end, but it is the South African public that eventually does determine the laws that we push through, because they have to be reflective of our morals. And so I really do hope that the South African public gets behind this application and calls out the state for its hypocrisy.
And how do people get involved? How do they assist? Like you said, if they wanted more information, how do they get a hold of you?
So you can find us on Instagram. Our handle is at The Embrace Project. You can also find us on our website, which is www.theembraceproject.com. And there is a whole tab dedicated to this Constitutional Court application. So you can get more information and more of an understanding of the case on that tab.
Leanne, thank you so very much for joining us on the show and giving us all of that information. Leanne, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for giving us this info. And Leanne talking to us about the Embrace Project embarking on the Constitutional Court Challenge.